We're learning Daf Lamed Aleph in Masechtas Nedarim. We're going to start right from the top, the Mishnah on the top. Now, the Mishnayos previously had given different examples of things that people say in their neder, and they don't mean exactly what the literal words that we suggest in the neder, because if you wanted to say it straight, you would have used different language. So the fact that you said it in the way you said it obviously has a certain implication, there's a certain meaning to it. So those, we've had a number of examples so far in the Mishnayos before, and this is another, the Mishnayos here on Daf Lamed Aleph continue in that vein. So the Mishnah right at the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph says as follows: Hanoider Mishoiv Se Shabbos. Again, if I wanted to say I'm assuring all Jews, I could have said that. But obviously I'm saying it in a funny way. So the question is, what do I mean when I say I'm making a neder for those people who keep Shabbos? So then the halacha is Asur B'Yisrael, you're Asur in all Yidin, V'Asur B'Kusim, and you're also Asur in, you would include in that neder people, the Kusim. The Kusim, as we know, are those, that group of people who were in the land of Ashur, and they moved in when the Asaras HaShvatim went to Golus, and they moved in and they started taking over Eretz Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent lions out to attack them, and they realized that they made a mistake, so they were Megayer. And the question, of course, is whether they were Megayer truthfully, whether they were really Megayer because of Yiddishkeit, or they were Megayer because they realized they were being punished but because of the line. So that's always a question, whether they're considered Geir Emes or Geir Arayas. But for this purpose, they definitely were accepted into the fold for a time being, and they kept Shabbos, and they keep Shabbos. We'll see this more in the Gemara. But the point is, when I say Shayv say Shabbos, I'm including Kusim, who also keep Shabbos. Similarly, Ma'aychle Shum, if I make an edit for those people who eat garlic, Aser b'Yisrael, v'aser b'Kusim. Again, I'm going to include all Yidden, and I'm also going to include Kusim, because the minig is Takanas Ezra was that we eat garlic Friday night, because that's a night of Puru Revu, and garlic enhances that the Puru Revu. So therefore, the minig became to eat garlic on Friday night, and the Kusim also would do this. Then, so therefore, those, that's who included. So here's an interesting thing. For those people who are Oile Regal, as we know, Erev Shavuos, it's, one of the three Regal, we go to Yerushalayim. That type of neder would include Aser B'Yisrael Umutar B'Kusim. That would only include real Yidin. It wouldn't include the Kusim, because the Kusim, in fact, did not go to Yerushalayim. They weren't Oile Regal. They had Har Grizim. They thought, based on their own whatever, however they got to this conclusion, but they built their own Beis Hamikdash on Har Grizim. So they didn't go to Yerushalayim. Okay, so those are the three examples that we mean to include Yidden, but we're saying it in a funny way, so it includes Kusim in the first two, but not in the third. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to discuss how come sometimes the Kusim are sometimes not included, sometimes they're not included. So the Gemara says, "My Shoyv say Shabbos." What do we mean when we say those people who rest on Shabbos? Ilema mimekaime Shabbos. If we're talking about those people who fulfill and keep the mitzvahs of Shabbos, so my ira b'kusim, why is this limited specifically to kusim? Afilo oivde kechavim nami. It could mean a guy also. Now, whether or not a guy is allowed to keep Shabbos is a discussion over here. But the point is that they could keep Shabbos. You could have a guy who is keeping Shabbos. So why can't a guy be included in this neder? So the Gemara says, Ela mimitsuvin al haShabbos. Fine. So we're talking about the reason why kusim are included is because they're included in the, they're commanded. They are required to keep Shabbos. Now this Gemara is going, as I mentioned before, there's a machlekes whether kusim ageri emes ageri arayis. This Gemara is going according to the shita that says that they were geri emes, that they were really gerim, and therefore they're chayiv in the mitzvahs. So now, if I say those people keeping Shabbos, and I mean to include those people who are commanded on Shabbos, so the kusim should be obligated. They should be obligated. They are obligated if they're really gerim, and they should be included in the neder. So the Gemara says, all right. So Fine. So maybe that's, so the Gemara says, Elamim Mitzuvin Ala Shabbos. So what we mean is, those people, those people are commanded, so that's why Goyim are not included, because even if they randomly happen to keep Shabbos, but they're not commanded on keeping Shabbos. They're keeping it for whatever reason, their own personal reasons, that doesn't make it really keeping Shabbos. Okay, so if you're saying the Neder means commanded, Ihachi Ema Seifa, the end of the Mishnah says, Me'oile Yerushalayim, the halacha was that though, when I include those people coming to Yerushalayim, Aser be Yisrael, Umutar Bekusim. So then it only includes Yidin, the regular Yisraelim, but it does not include the Kusim. Now, am I? If you're going according to the opinion that Kusim are Geri Emes, that you really consider them Gerim and they're really Yidin, the Kusim are commanded to come to Yerushalayim. The fact that they don't come and the fact that they have, they made up their own little whatever, doesn't potter them from the fact that they have an obligation to come to Yerushalayim. So why wouldn't the Neder include them? They're commanded. So Amar Abaya, says the answer is as follows. When I make this neder, mitzuva v'oisa katani, I want them to be, what I mean with my neder is I want both of these things. I want those people who are commanded, and they in fact do it. Okay, so therefore, b'tarti babi kamaisa, in the first two cases, which included those people who keep Shabbos and those people who eat garlic, yisrael v'kusim mitzuvin v'oisin. So that includes both regular Yisraelim and Kusim, because they in fact do keep Shabbos, to the extent that they keep Shabbos, but they keep Shabbos and they do it because they're commanded to do so. Whereas, Ovdei Kechavim, who da avde oisin ve'ena mitzuvin. By the Goyim, they might keep Shabbos in their version of keeping Shabbos, but they're not commanded to do so. So therefore that's not included in my neder. And on the flip side, ba'oile Yerushalayim, when it comes to coming to, up to Yerushalayim for the regel, Yisrael mitzuvim va'oisin. Again, regular Yidin, we are commanded, we do it, and because we're commanded. Kusim mitzuvim ve'en oisin. The Kusim, they might be commanded to do so as a regular Yid, they have an obligation to come to the regel, but lamaisa, in reality, as a practical matter, they do not come to Yerushalayim. They're not oile regel to Yerushalayim. That being said, therefore that's not what I mean when I say my nether. Again, going back to the same theme that we said before, like all the other Mishnais, it's because I use these funny ways of saying I said it in a way different, so obviously there's a meaning behind why I said it. I didn't want to just say Yisro. I wanted to say something that either includes or excludes various denominations as well. That's what I mean when I use these Lashonis and the Neder. That takes us to the next Mishnah, which also is another example. Koinim she'eni ne'ene levnei noyach. I say I'm not going to give any hana to a ben noyach. Now again, that's a funny expression. The halacha is mutar b'yisrael v'asur b'ovdei kechavim. You're not including a yid. When I say it's mutter, what I mean to say is that my neder does not include, because I'm trying to make everybody aser, does not include a regular Yisrael. It only includes other goyim. Now, even though the reality is, only Noach and his children survive the teva, survive the mabul, so really everybody comes from Noach, and even so, it does not include the yidin. So, that the Gemara immediately asks over here. He says, "Yisrael mi nafik mechlal b'nei Noach. Are we not b'nei Noach? The Yidden also do come from ben Noach. So why aren't we included in the Neder?" So the Gemara answers, "Kivan de ikdish Avram. Once Avram Avinu became kadosh and became separated, iskaru al shemay. We're called b'nei Avram. We are the descendants of Avram Avinu." Even though the reality is that we are technically descendants of Noach, we are. So when they do those genetic testing, yeah. So we're all related. But Lamaisa, at this point, because once we come from Avram Avinu, we identify ourselves as Bnei Avram. We do not identify ourselves as Bnei Noach, and we know that because when we talk, that's again by Nedarim. Remember, we go Acher Loshem Bnei Adam. What people mean. When we say Ben Noach, when we say the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach, we're not referring to ourselves, we're referring to everybody else besides ourselves. So we see that now that we are descendant of Avraham Avinu, that's how we identify ourselves. As opposed to the rest of the world, we identify them as Ben Noach, and that's what I mean when I make a neder. Another interesting example, the next Mishnah says, Sha'ani nena lizera Avraham. Okay, so actually this Mishnah is almost a sort of a continuation of the Mishnah before. When I say I'm Sha'ani nena lizera Avraham, I'm not going to have an hano, or I'm not going to give hano to Zera Avraham. So this is what we just said, we're descendants of Avraham. So Aser be Yisrael, so then it means only to include Yisraelim, and we become mutter in the rest of the Goyim. Okay, now by the way, the Rishonim, just for those people who are paying attention, it's when it says She'eni Nena, that's really a Lashon Shvuah, not really a Lashon Neder, but they say that he means to make a Neder in this Lashon, even though it's not, it should be Sha'ani, right? It should be, right, because it's Sha'ani, it should be Sha'ani Nena. But the Rishonim say that it still means a Lashon Neder, even though it's using a Lashon of Shvuah. But that
Konam is what? Lashon Shvuah?
What?
Konam is what? Lashon
Shvuah? Konam is a Lashon Neder also. Yeah. Konam is a Lashon Neder. That's not a problem. In any event, okay, so the point is, again, you made your Neder using a funny way. You want to identify a group called Zera Avraham. Now, Zera Avraham, literally translated, means the descendants of Avraham Avinu. So the Gemara right away asks the Kashava, Ika Yishmol. So Yishmol is a descendant of Avraham Avinu. He should be included in the Neder. So the Gemara answers, brings the pasuk, Ki bi Yitzchak Yikar L'chazara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Bris Banu Zarim said, told Avraham Avinu that I'm going to call Yitzchak your Zera. So, and by the way, that explains why we don't say B'nei Avraham Avinu, we say Zera Avraham, and that's why I said that Lashon on purpose, that in the Mishnah anyway. So that, because we're specifically talking about Yitzchak, we're not talking about Yishmael. We're not talking about all descendants of Avraham Avinu, we're talking about the Zera. What's identified as the Zera of Avraham Avinu, and therefore it only includes Yitzchak. Okay, but the Gemara says still technically Va'ika Esav, but what about Esav, who is also a descendant of Yitzchak? So if you want to limit and channel Avraham Avinu's descendants through Yitzchak, that's fine. But Yitzchak also had another child called Esav. So why isn't Esav included in the Neder? To which we would say, Bi Yitzchak, V'loi Kol Yitzchak. So again, the Lashon of the Pasuk says, Ki Bi Yitzchak Yikar L'chazara. That in Yitzchak, and in Yitzchak means within Yitzchak there are some that are included and some that are not included. And therefore, again, this Lashon is referring to those that are included, and that's the regular, what we identify as regular Klal Yisrael, and not Esav, who happens to be a descendant of Yitzchak. That is technically true. But that is not what we mean when we refer to Zera Avraham. Okay, so those are the Lashonis. Now we're going to go off on some more generic type of inclusions and exclusions. So the next Mishnah says as follows. She'eni nene mi Yisrael. I'm not going to have any Hanoah from any Yid. Okay, so finally, by the way, he says Yisrael. That's not a tricky language. We know what Yisrael means. We know who the Yisraelim are. But the point is, I made it as a general rule. So just so that you know, there's a machlekes rishonim over here. When I say mi Yisrael, whether I'm talking, when I meant, intended to make all of Klal Yisrael Aser, versus an individual in Klal Yisrael also. Just keep that in the back of your mind. So the pashtus is that Sha'ani Nenem Yisrael is referring to all. Some Rishonim say the Mishnah is Dafka, and this only applies when I say everybody. It doesn't apply to an individual. And some Rishonim say no, by the fact that the Mishnah is talking about in general. It's using an example of general, but the same rules that we're about to put forth, the same rules would apply if we were dealing with an individual also. I made this neder to an individual as well. But let's just assume for argument, let's take the Mishnah for what it says, before we get into that machlekes. But the Mishnah says, Shani Nenemi, so I'm not going to have any Hana from another Yid. So what do? Lekech b'yoser, I have to live. Right? So I have to buy stuff. So if I buy things, I have to buy it for more than its market value. But if I sell to him, I have to sell it for under its value. Because then I'm not really getting Hanoah from him. The transaction is happening, but the act of buying. Now this is important to focus on this for the purposes of clearly understanding the Gemara. It's the act of buying and the act of selling. Whether I'm getting Hanoah through that activity. Forget about the object itself or the money itself. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the act of buying, the act of selling. So by the, when I, if I overpay for something, so that act of buying, I'm not really getting anah from it, because I'm not benefiting from that sale because of the fact that I'm overpaying for it. And similarly, if I'm selling for less than its value, so I'm not really getting anah, a benefit. I'm not getting a benefit from selling something if I'm selling it for under its market value. That's the first version of the, that's the first case of the Mishnah. Similarly, ne, she Yisrael, nan and li. So they, then if I make a neder that nobody is allowed to have hana from me, so then, lekeach bepachos, so they can't get any benefit from me. So if I have to buy something from them, I have to pay for less. Because if I pay more than its market value, they're getting a benefit from me and I'm not allowed to give them a benefit. That's the neder that I made. Why a person makes this neder? You can ask that on its own. But this is the case. The case is, I said, I'm not going to give him any benefit. So the halacha is, I have to, lekech b'pachos, I have to buy it for less than market value. U'moicher b'yoser, and if I sell him anything, I have to overprice it. I have to sell him more than the market value. V'ein shoymin loy. So the girsa that we have in our Mishnah is v'ein shoymin loy. As opposed, some have the girsa of v'im or v'i, but we have the girsa of v'ein shoymin loy. We don't listen to him. Meaning, if you want to try to rip your friend off and he doesn't want to listen to you, it's not his problem. He doesn't have to, you can say, well, I made an edder, so I can't give you a no, so I have to overcharge you. You know, that's your problem. That's not his problem. In other words, the third party over here, the person who's being impacted by your specific neder, does not have to listen to your neder, and he doesn't have to sell it to you if he doesn't want to. You can't force him and say, well, I made a neder, so in order to be Mekayim my neder, you have to now shtel tzu to my whim. That's not the work. Vein shaymin lo, you don't listen to him. Okay. He doesn't have to listen. In the last case of the Mishnah is she'eni nena lahen v'hein li. Now let's say I made an eder. I'm not going to give them any ano, and they're not going to get ano from me, or I'm not going to get ano from them, and they're not going to get ano from me. So now, what are you going to do over here? I can't really do business. I can't buy and sell anything. I can't buy a carton of milk because I can't give them the proper ano. So the Mishnah over here has a very interesting halacha. The halacha is, don't worry, you can still interact with goyim if you have to. So the reason for this case is because we know, this is the way the Ran explains, we know the halacha is that if you make a neder that's impossible to fulfill, so then immediately that neder is nachal. And the example the Ran gives is the famous example where a person makes a neder that he's not going to sleep for 7 days. So we know the halacha is that, we know the reality is that it's impossible to stay awake for 7 days straight without any sleep whatsoever. So the halacha is that he's considered being transgressing and being over the neder immediately. So that neder, and then the neder is nachal, and then you could do whatever you need to do. So you might think the same thing over here also, where I say, I'm not going to interact with anybody, one way or them from me and me from them, so then it's an impossible neder for fulfill. That's why the Mishnah is telling you, is don't worry about it, you can still interact with Goyim. You're right, it'll make your life very difficult, but you can still interact with Goyim, so it's not an impossible nether to fulfill. It can be fulfilled, and maybe in a way that you don't want to, but it can be. So once it can be fulfilled, so you're stuck with it, and that's going to be your scenario. Okay? But the point is, that the first two cases of the Mishnah, okay, so that's the last case of the Mishnah, but the first cases of the Mishnah, when I talk about I'm not going to give them ano, I'm not going to take ano from them, we're talking about that I cannot sell at market. Okay, so if that's the case, the Gemara now tries to compare this to other halachas. We have to figure this out exactly. So, Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel gives us another halacha. Halaykeach kli min ha'uman, somebody who takes a object from, takes a keli from a worker. Hi. So the point of the word, levakroi, he says, I got checking it. So I'm checking this, what am I checking it for? I'm checking it to see whether or not I'm going to purchase this object. Venenas biyodoi, and then something happened while it was in my hands, and I'm not able to give it back, chayiv. I'm chayiv to pay. So let me give you an example. Again, this is not the perfect example, but just to illustrate the point. I go into a esrog store, and I say, I like this esrog. But before I buy it, I want to go to my rav, and I want to ask him if it's a good esrog. No, I don't know enough about Asregim. I want to bring it to the Rav. So I take it Levakroy. I'm taking the Esrog. So I took it out of the Esrog store. I'm going to bring it to my Rav's house. And then, while I'm having an Oinus happen, however you want to define it, something completely out of my control happens, and the Esrog is destroyed, and I cannot return the Esrog anymore. So this is what Shmuel is telling you. Now, and we're talking about, it's also Machlokes Rishonim, but let's go with the simple shot like the Ran says, that we're talking about when I walked out of the Esrog store, I knew how much I was going to pay for it. I knew this was a $100 Esrog, no problem. So I now take the Esrog, and so I can't return it. So the halacha is that I am chayev to pay for it. Now, why is it true that I'm chayev to pay for it? So the Gemara concludes, Alma, from here we see, Kosover, we hold Hanos Loikeach Hi. It's because it's considered the benefit of a purchase and a sale in this type of scenario where I know what the price is and I'm getting the object, is considered the benefit goes to the purchaser. The purchaser is the one who's benefiting from it more so. And what the benefit is, okay, so there's different ways to explain it, but we'll use one explanation just to, so we understand. The benefit is that once I take the Esrog out of the store, again, I'm using this example just to illustrate the point, once I take this Esrog out of the store, I now control the fate of this Esrog, whether I'm gonna buy it, or I have the right to give it back to him, and then maybe he can sell it to somebody else. But once I take it, even though I haven't paid for it yet, and even though technically I haven't made a kinyan on it yet, I control whether it's gonna go to me. I can decide that it's mine, and I get to keep it. And I can keep it away, so to speak, from other people. I locked it up from other people. So that is my benefit. That's what the Gemara means when it says to the benefit of the Lekech. So so Shmuel wants to establish that's the basis for what we're doing over here. That it's the benefit goes to Lekech. But let's try to put this into our Gemara, into our Mishnah. Tanan. We learned in our Mishnah, She'eni Nanam Yisrael, if I make a neder that I am not going to have anoa from any other yid, Moicher B'pachos, when I sell it to him, I have to sell for less. I have to sell for less than the value. But the implication is, Avoshava B'shava Loi. But if I sell it to him for real value, then that's not permitted. Because I said I'm not allowed to get anoa from it, so I'm not allowed to sell it for value. So the problem is, the Gemara says, "V'i anos lekechi afilu shavu shavu." But if the transaction, as we just said, is really to the benefit of the purchaser, why can't I sell it for market value? When we gave the example of the Esrig, we were talking about where he's going to pay fair price for it. And even so, that was considered, the benefit was considered only the Leikech's and not considered the Meicher's benefit because Leikech controlled. So why do I have to sell it for under market value in order for the transfer of the benefit to be to the Leikech? If I sell it for equal value, also that's the benefit of the Leikech because he's controlling the transaction. So why does our Mishnah say you have to sell it for less? So the Gemara answers, because our Mishnah's case is Masnisin Bezvino Deramiyal Ape. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where the object is the kind of thing that it's stuck to me, meaning it's hard to sell. It's not something that you sell in a general manner. It's something that sits around for a long time, and then eventually maybe you'll be able to find a buyer. So then anytime I can sell it, even if I sell it for the regular market value, there is a tremendous benefit. Again, I'm benefiting from the transaction because without him, I would never be able to sell it. So to speak, the seller needs the buyer. If the seller needs the buyer in that case, because without him I have nothing, so I'm benefiting from it. Because now, even if I give it to him, now he's stuck with it. But so therefore, if I sell it for regular market value, so now I'm actually, as the seller, I'm benefiting from it either only or also. But the point is, I'm certainly benefiting from it because without him I would not, this transaction would never happen. And so that's why I'm required in our Mishnah to sell it to undervalue. Because selling it for undervalue, once again, that takes away any real benefit from me. Because what am I gaining? What am I gaining by selling something for less than its market value? I'm losing money on the deal. Losing money on the deal is never considered value. And that's why our Mishnah says that I have to sell it for undervalue, because selling it even at value would be a benefit for me, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to sell it at all. Okay, if that's true, if we're talking about objects that are difficult to sell, imkain emaresha. So let's go back in the first case of the Mishnah. It says, "Lekeach biyoser." The first case of the Mishnah was that when I buy this, let's assume the same object, if I'm the purchaser now from somebody else, I have to overpay for it. Now, if that's true that we're talking about the kind of object that's very difficult to sell, and he is the one who's desperate to sell, why do I have to overpay for it? Even if I pay him fair market value for it, he should be thrilled because he finally is getting rid of it. Something that he couldn't get rid of, and now he's finally getting rid of it. So why do I have to overpay for it? I could pay equal value and still not be considered giving him benefit. Sorry, and not right. Why do I have to overpay even if I pay? Right, even if I pay value, I'm not the one getting if it's something, because I'm going to get stuck with it. So I'm not really gaining from this transaction if I pay value. Why do I have to overpay in order for it to be considered that I'm not getting any value of it? That's the first question. Void, and another question is, Amos Sefer, let's look at the next case in the Mishnah. It says, so Yisrael Nan and Li, where they're not allowed to have anah from me. So it also says, Lekech B'pachas, that's in the brackets, it's part of what the Mishnah says, but when they're not allowed to have anah from me, so I have to sell it. I have to buy from them for less. That way they're not getting, but we're focusing on umoicher biyoisur. But I have to sell it for overpriced. Now, again, the ib is vina de rami alape. Once again, if the object that we're talking about in our examples is all an object that is very difficult to sell, why do I have to overpay? Why do I have to sell it for over value, if again the point is that they're not going to get any benefit from me, if it's difficult for me to sell, and for them to sell when they buy it, why do they have to overpay? Even if they pay regular value, they're not getting any real benefit for it, right? If a person's in the business of, let's say, flipping a house, so if I pay full value for it, I can't stay in business that way. Right. If I pay full value, then I try to flip it. I'm going to make the same money I spent on it. That's not considered business. Think about when you walk into a pawn shop. Right? A guy wants to sell something in a pawn shop. The first thing that the guy does is, okay, your object is worth $1,000. I'll pay you $600. What do you mean? You just told me it's worth $1,000. So the real answer is because his whole business is buying it for undervalued and then selling it for value. That's how he makes his money. That's how pawn shops work. They pay you less than what it's worth in order for them to be able to make money on it. So the same thing over here also. But if we're talking about something that's difficult to sell, why do I have to sell it for more? Even if I sell it for its value, I'm really also not giving him any benefit. So, or he's not giving me any benefit, I should say. So the Gemara says, or I stopped in the middle of the sentence. If we're talking about the kind of object that's difficult to sell, I feel a shavu shavu. So even if I sell it at its regular value, they're not giving me any benefit because they're just they're not giving me, if I'm buying it, selling it to him for regular value, so they're not giving it any, they're not giving me any value they're not giving it to me because it's something that's difficult to sell. So the Gemara says, you're right. So we have to change up the case a little bit. It depends on which case we're talking about. Seifa bezvina charifa. So rather, the Seifa case is talking about with something that's really easy to sell. So now it changes the dynamic of the whole transaction. Because if we're talking about something that's easy to sell, so then, yes, when a purchaser walks into my store, I don't need him. Because if he walks out of the store and he doesn't, and I don't make the sale, someone else is going to walk in 5 minutes later.
Right.
5 minutes later, he's going to get somebody. So he doesn't need me. So he would be considered getting the benefit when he takes it. So the only way I'm not getting benefit from him is if I sell it for undervalue. Then he's not considered getting anything from me. If I sell it for actual value, so then he's the one who's getting the benefit. So I have to sell it for more than value, because then he's not getting any benefit, and then it would be mutter for me to give him, then I'm not giving him any, I know that sale is able to go through. So the Gemara says, "I hachi lekech b'pachos, I feel the shava b'shava." If we're talking about that, you're right that it's so easy to sell. Again, I shouldn't be considered giving him any value because I should even be able to sell it at market value if it's something that's so easy to sell. I'm not really gaining anything by selling it for its value. Elo, so now on the top of Lamed Aleph from the vase, so the Gemara says, you're right. Okay, the way to look at it is like this. We have to separate the cases and say like this. Masnisin bezvina metzia. Our Mishnah is talking about where it's a regular, yeah, it's normal, it's not something that flies off the shelves, and it's also not something that stays on the shelves for, you know, difficult to sell. It's something that, you know, it sells when it sells in the normal course of business. So then, if the point is, so now, anytime, if it's something that's regular value, sorry, easy to, it's regular to sell, so then if I sell it shava b'shava, then the loikeach is always considered the one getting, then actually the way the Ran learns is, if it's shava b'shava, then both of them are considered getting the benefit from the sale, from the transaction. Because on the one hand it's not easy to sell, on the other hand it's not difficult to sell, so when the transaction goes through, we're both getting from it, so we're both benefiting from it. You're getting it because you want it, okay, you have it now, and I'm getting the benefit because I'm finally selling it, because it's normal to sell. So if I sell it at the regular value, we're both getting anah. Now, if I'm the one that's also to get anah, I have to sell it for undervalue. If you're the one that can't get anah, so then I have to pay undervalue. And that's what the case of the Mishnah is. Whereas, Shmuel, when Shmuel says that the loikeach is the one who always gets the benefit, he's talking about bezvina charifa. He's talking about where something that's easy to sell. Because if the loikeach is considered the one who gets the benefit, as we said before, because now he controls this transaction. And if it's something that easily sells, that's gonna sell in 2 seconds, like, think about it like this. Think about tickets to the World Series. If you don't go online within 5 minutes after the tickets become available, you're not going to get a ticket to the World Series. You're not going to be able to get it at its real value. You know, someone else is going to buy it, and then 2 weeks later you're going to say, ooh, I want to go to the World Series. You're going to end up paying double or triple the price for the tickets. So think about it like that. That's Shmuel's case. Shmuel's case is, we're talking about tickets to the World Series, that they sell in 2 seconds. So you have to go ahead and you have to buy it. So now, as the loikeach, if you're able to get it at a regular price, that's mamash your benefit. And therefore, that's considered hanoah for the, that hanoah is considered the hanoah so like it. Okay, think about it like that. And that's why Shmuel says, if anything happens, and an oinus happens, you picked it up, you broke it, you pay for it. That's why Shmuel's case is that the loikeach is considered the beneficiary, or the one who gets the benefit from the transaction, and he has to pay for it right away. But at the end of the day, it is a chiddush to say that it's only the loikeach and not the moicher. So the Gemara brings a raya. Tanya kavazir de Shmuel. I have a braisa which is similar, which brings a proof to Shmuel's halacha. It says like this: Halakeach kelim min hatagor. I buy objects from a merchant. L'shagrin lebeis chomov. But the purpose of my purchase is to send them as a present, and in this case, to my father-in-law. V'amarlo. So the purchaser says to the, right, so I'm buying a car for my father-in-law. So of course he's going to appreciate it tremendously. So I say like this, V'amarloi, and I say to the merchant, I say, Im mekablen oison mimeni, if they'll take the object from me, ani noison l'chad demehem, then I'll pay you for it. Obviously, then the sale goes through, the transaction is concluded, I will pay for it. Then lav, but if my father-in-law rejects it and says, no, I'm not taking this, then ani noison l'chad lefi toivas hano shebehen. Then I'll pay you, I'm not going to pay you for the object because he's going to return it to you and he's rejecting it, but then I'll pay you for the benefit that I got from the fact that he realizes that I was trying to send a present. Okay, because there is a benefit, that whatever you would be willing to pay for that, whether it's $5 or $10, whatever it is, but the mere fact that he understands that you tried to get him this present, that is worth something, so then I would pay for it. But that's very important to say, because I am paying for it, for something. Even if the transaction doesn't go through, I still have to pay for the benefit of making it look like the transaction was go through. So therefore the halacha is like this. Nensu b'halicha, if the object gets destroyed while it is being sent, before it is received by the father-in-law, chayiv, then he's already chayiv. In other words, it doesn't matter whether the transaction goes through or not at that point. Since it is being sent with the objective to get to the recipient, So the purchaser is already chayiv, is chayiv in all regards for this object. And the explanation, of course, the point of this brisa is to prove that we see the benefit is to the lekech. It's already considered that he's getting this benefit, and therefore he's obligated to take care of it. It's as if it's his, unless he returns it. That's the way you have to look at it. It's already his, because he gets all the benefit, until he returns his chayiv even ba'intzim. Now, there's actually a machlekes rishonim over here, whether the benefit is because he has, the halacha is, there's two ways to explain it. Either because he's considered a shoyel, because I'm actually borrowing the object until it gets bought, and as a shoyel we know the halacha is as a shomer, as a shoyel he's chayev afilu ba'intzin. That's one explanation. That's the way the Ran learns. Rashi in Bal Metzia learns that the reason why he's chayev is because he's already considered the loikeach. So Rashi has a chiddush that he's considered already having purchased it, even though they haven't finished, consummated the transaction, but lamaisa I'm already considered a loikeach, and it's my object, just like anything else. If an einus happens to something in my living room, I'm obviously, it's my loss. So the same thing over here also, I'm already considered a loikeach, and it would be considered my loss. That's the way Rashi learns. Again, the Ran learns simply because I'm a shoyel, and a shoyel is chayev afilu ba'einsa. Anyway, that's the first half of halacha, but this already proves Shmuel's point that we see already the benefit goes to the lekech, and it's considered his even before he gets the object. We conclude the transaction. It's yours unless I return it. That's now the halacha, but let's continue the brice over here. B'chazara potter, but if something, an oinus happens while it is being returned, the purchaser is not obligated to pay. Obviously, he's not obligated to pay. What I mean is the object. He's not obligated to pay the purchase price, but he'll be obligated to pay the Tovus HaNoah, which he already promised he was going to pay anyway. And the Braisa says, because it was considered a Noise Socher. Now, why do we consider him a Noise Socher? A Noise Socher is like somebody who's borrowing for payment, or a Shomer that has to pay, that is getting paid. So that's, because of the fact that I'm paying the Tovus HaNoah, so that already makes me, at least at the level of a shomer, and there's some monetary value going back and forth over here. So I'm getting the Tovus HaNoah even on the return until I pay for it. So therefore, I'm a shomer socher. So what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina would be, I'm not chayiv an oinsim. A shomer socher is not chayiv an oinsim, or a nice socher is not chayiv an oinsim, but I am chayiv in gneiva ba'aveda. So if it was just a routine, I lost it, or it got stolen, a routine steal, whatever that means, so then I would still be chayiv to pay because I'm a shomer. As opposed to if an oinus happens, a lightning comes and strikes it down, that would be an oinus out of my control, so then that I'm not chayiv to pay for. Anyway, so at this juncture in the Gemara, we've proven that in a regular transaction, even before you finish the transaction, it's already in control of the lekech. It's considered the benefit of the lekech, and the lekech is the one who has complete control of the object and the sale, and therefore he's responsible for it. And this price, it takes it one step further. He's even chayiv an oinsim if he's not able to return it. So the Gemara then tells the story. Ahu safsiro, there was this middleman. Now, middleman means what we think it means, is that this person buys a large amount of objects, and then he goes ahead and he sells it. So let's think about, like, for example, Tanuva. They go ahead to all the farms and they buy all the tomatoes, and then they distribute it to the various stores. So they're the middleman. So this was this middleman, the shakol chamra lizvuni, that he took a large barrel of wine to sell. Veloy izbin, but he wasn't successful. He wasn't able to distribute it. He wasn't able to sell it. Bahadi the hoder, but so he said, okay, I'm going to give it back. So while he himself is going to return it, itnis, something happens. Chamra, itnis chamra, the wine, I don't know, turned into vinegar, the barrel exploded, whatever happened, it was destroyed. So chayve Rav Nachman l'shlumi. Rav Nachman says, even on the way back, you're chayv to pay. Now let's remind ourselves, we just said a moment ago, according to Shmuel, we brought a braisa, that if an oinus happens on the way back, the purchaser is not responsible to pay for it. And here, Rav Nachman goes ahead and says, you're chayv to pay. So immediately, Esve Rava, the Rav Nachman, so Rava asks this as a kasha on Rav Nachman, Nentu b'halichu d'aloch, is if the oinus happens while it's coming to me chayv. Yes, I agree. On the way here, I'm responsible for it. B'chazara potter, but on the way back, I'm potter. So why are you saying that this guy is chayev to pay when he clearly said, here, I'm bringing your barrel of wine back. I'm not taking responsibility. Why is Rav Nachman chayev him? So Amar Lei, so Rav Nachman gave him a very sadistic answer. He says, Chazara de Safsira, the return of the middleman, Hailocha he, is still considered on the way here. Why? The Ilu Mishkach Lizvune, because even if he found a purchaser, if he was able to sell it, Afilu Ababa de Besa, even if he was still on the door of the original owner. He was like literally 2 inches away from returning it. Milo Mizavalei, wouldn't he sell it? So a safsira is somebody who's always looking to sell. He's always any opportunity to sell. So if somebody shows up on Tuesday looking to buy last week's magazine, they'll definitely sell it. They can't say, well, after Shabbos, I'm not responsible for it anymore because no one's buying it. No, that's not true. If somebody walks in and wants to buy last week's edition, which does happen, people sometimes, for whatever reason, buy the old editions, that's still going to be, he's still going to look for it as a sale. So it's always considered on the way there until he literally returns it and puts it back in the person's possession. Okay? So that's going to be the nafkamina. So as long as I'm getting the benefit from it, this is the perspective to get over here. As long as I'm getting the benefit from this transaction, or I have the opportunity to get the benefit from this transaction, I am responsible for it. The moment I no longer have any interest in it, I'm saying, forget it, I'm rejecting the sale, now it's just a matter of getting back, now it's not mine anymore. Now it goes back to the original purchaser, and I'm not responsible for it anymore. At least I'm not responsible for it as a shoyel, I become responsible for it only, at most, as a shomer sachar. So, the same thing is true, but the exception to the rule is the middleman, who's always looking to make a buck, who's always looking, he's always selling, so it's always, the opportunity is always there, so it's always considered my benefit, and until I literally return it, it's my responsibility. That's the sugya over here. Okay, because this is a little bit complicated, so let me just point out the highlights over here. The highlight of the sugya is that when you're dealing with an object that is, that, you know, sells on the regular market, so there the halacha is both the buyer and the seller are really getting the benefit from that transaction. They both want it to happen. When you're dealing with something that's very difficult to sell, that is considered the advantage is when a sale goes through, it's the moicher, it's the seller that's getting it because he's so happy, he's so thrilled to get rid of it, he's happy that anybody will take it. When you're dealing with something that's flying off the shelves, where, you know, as you know, in that example where the tickets are going to be gone 5 minutes after it opens up, that is the lekeach, is totally in the driver's seat there, and therefore they're the ones that are considered the beneficiary, they're the ones that consider the benefit, and they're, right, it's only them, so to speak, in this perspective, it's only them that's getting the benefit, and mamela, if something happens, it is the lekeach's responsibility for it, or you have to, okay, and then you can apply it to those are the rules, and then you can apply it to your various cases. Okay, great. That takes us to the next Mishnah. So the last Mishnah on it's actually in the middle of the Omid Lamed Aleph on the Vase. The Mishnah says like this. Going back to our examples of things that people say when they make a neder, what are they including? What do they mean with these funny ways of saying things, and what do they not mean? So here we're going to go through another couple of examples. Koinem Sha'ani Nene La'arele. I say, I am making a neder that I'm not going to get hanoah from an oral. An oral means somebody who does not have a bris milah. That's the literal translation. However, the Mishnah says, what do I mean? Mutter ba'arle Yisrael. I am still mutter in... Now, oral means somebody who's not gemalt. Okay, he did not have a bris. It's still... So, that means I'm assuring those people who are not gemalt, it's still mutter ba'arle Yisrael. They're not included in the Yisr, even if you have a Yid who is not gemalt. Why? And the example that the Mefarish over here gives, the classic examples, you have a guy who's had three brothers, each time they had a bris milah, they died from the bris, and then the fourth one, it's a sakana, it's mamash a sakana, so he can't have a bris. Okay, but Lamaisa, he's still an oral. Lamaisa, he didn't have a bris. He has a heter not to have a bris, nachayv karis or anything, but Lamaisa he didn't have a bris. Still, he's not included in the nether, he's not considered an oral, even though he is physically an oral, but that's not what I mean when I say. in oral. And for that matter, the same thing, I mean all goyim. Even a goy that happened to have a bris. When I say an oral, I mean all goyim. I mean even the Arabs that might have had a bris or not. Right? I mean, that's what's included over here. Similarly, the flip side is shani nena lumoilim. When I say I'm not going to have any enough for those people who had a bris milo, so then also barley yisrael. Once again, that includes even an oral, even though he actually physically never had the bris. But when I say a mol, somebody who's gemalt, I mean even a regular yisrael, even if he didn't have a bris. Umutter b'mayle avgechavim. And once again, even though I use the word gemalt, he had a bris milo, I don't mean a guy. Even if the guy happened to physically happen to have a bris. Why? As the Mishnah itself explains, She'ena or l'kruyo el shame oivde kichovim. When I say an oral, the expression of an oral means a guy. That's really what I'm referring to. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, kikol ha-goyim arelim. The goyim are considered an oral. They are considered an oral. The whole base Yisrael are lelev. And Klal Yisrael, this is talking about in the Musar, it's in Yirmiyah, you're right, and it's giving Musar, so he's saying, and the Klal Yisrael's are lelev means they have something over their heart, which is why we were not connecting to HaKadosh Baruch. V'oimer, and the Pasuk says, V'haya plishti aral azeh, and again, when David HaMelech was referring to the plishtim, he referred to them as an aral, a goy. Now, the reason why we need the second Pasuk is because the first Pasuk could have been understood, the goyim are arelim, they're considered arle lev. We could have thought that we don't mean physically by the makam milo. We could have thought this is referring to their hearts. So that's why we had to say the second Pasuk, plishtim aral azeh, that I referred to this plishti, this goy, as an aral. It's an individual. We wouldn't refer to him as an Earl Lave. V'aymer, but we need a third pasuk because again, it could be that this guy happened to not have a bris, even though we wouldn't know that. So how do we know we're referring to all of goyim? Because the pasuk says v'aymer. The third pasuk says pen tisam chena benois plishim. Maybe they'll make benois plishim will make you happy. Pen ta loizno benois harelim. Maybe they'll make you happy. Again, it's another way of saying happy. The benois harelim, the daughters of the arelim. Now the arelim over here is referring to all the goyim. So we see that all the goyim are referred to as arelim, regardless of whether they physically have a bris mila or not. Okay, so that's the discussion regarding the lashon of aral, what it includes, what it doesn't include. But the end of the Mishnah says as follows: Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Meusahi ha'arlo, not having a bris mila is disgusting. Shenizgana by rishoyim, because that's how we refer to the rishoyim. We put it. It's a derogatory phrase. Shneimer, the pasuk says, "Ki kol hagoyim arelim." We refer to goyim as arelim. It's a derogatory way of saying things. That's the negative side. Rabbi Shmuel does it more on the positive side. It says, "Gedoy lamilo." The milo is so great. Shenichrusu aleh shloisha esrei brisois, because the Torah refers to it in 13 brisois. As a bris between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in 13 different ways. So it's a tremendous connection to Hashem. Rabbi Yossi Yomer Gedoy Lamilo, it's also great. Shadoichas HaShabbos Chamura. That Shabbos, even though normally you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, we all know the halacha that if you have a bris, even on Shabbos, we do the bris on Shabbos, it's so great that it even overrides Shabbos. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Yomer Gedoy Lamilo Shaloinis Nitlo Loi Lamoisha. The Milo is so great. Shaloin Nitlo Loi Lamoisha Atzadik Ale. Malaysia, that it didn't even protect Moshe Rabbeinu. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was missing a bris mila, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, that when he was traveling, he hadn't done bris mila to his son. So that did not, that missing of the bris mila was so bad that it didn't protect him from all the other mitzvahs, even though he had all the other mitzvahs to protect him. We see that the mila overrides that and is the most important mitzvah. It's doicha, again, if you have a nega right on the makam milo, you're still able to cut it off, even though normally you're not allowed, it's usher to cut off the milo. Rabbi Yomer, Rabbi says, also gedoy la milo, shekol mitzvah sha'asa Avram Avinu, loy nikra sholeng, that even with all the other mitzvahs that Avram Avinu did, he wasn't considered a complete ad shemol until he did the bris milo. Shenemar, esach lefonai, v'hayasomim, that Hashem told him, if you do the bris, you'll go in front of me, and then you'll be complete. So we see that doing the bris milah makes the person complete. Davar acher, another pshat is gedolah milah. That milah is so great. Shomola he, if not for the fact that there was a mitzvah of milah and knowing that Klal Yisrael was going to keep the milah, the baruch Hashem would never have created the world. Hashem created the world for the sake of doing the milah. Shenemar, as the pasuk itself says, koyamar Hashem, as Hashem says, imloy brisi yaman v'laylo. If I didn't do a bris day and night, chukah shemayim v'aretz loisamti, I would never have placed down the shemayim v'aretz. So we see that the reason for the shemayim v'aretz is so that we can be mekayim the bris. Now it happens to be for those people who are learning the Ran, you'll notice that the Ran brings another thing that we don't, only the Ran has the girsa. We don't have the girsa in our Mishnah. It's not even printed in our Mishnais. But if you look at the last run, four lines from the bottom, the Ran brings Rabbi Yossi that says another godless of the bris. He says shukula kenega kol mitzvah shabbat toira shenema hine dam habris. Okay, again, we don't have this girsa in our Gemara, but the Ran had this girsa, and he says another great thing about the bris milah is that it's kenega kol hamitzvah shabbat toira. Okay, so that's just a very interesting point to point out. All right, so because of the time, let's quickly go through the Gemara on the last few lines of the Amud. Tanya Rishu ben Karcha Oimer. Rishu ben Karcha says, Gedolah Milah. Milah is so great. Shekol Zechuyas, all the mitzvahs, Sha'asa Moshe Rabbeinu, all the schusim that Moshe Rabbeinu had, Loi Omdu Loi, didn't help him, Kishin Esrasu Min Amilah, when he was lazy. I'm using the word lazy, but it doesn't literally mean lazy. I mean, he was weak. He was weak from the mitzvah of Milah, meaning he did not do the bris Milah when he left Yisrael, until he went on his way down to Mitzrayim. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Vayifkeshu Hashem, Vayivakasham Yisrael, Hashem wanted to kill him, that while he was traveling down to Mitzrayim. And we know the story over there was because he didn't do the bris milah, the snake was attacking him, and Tzipora came and did the bris milah. So until he did the bris milah, he was vulnerable, even though he was Moshe Rabbeinu and had all the schusim in the world. Still, those schusim were not able to protect him because he was missing the bris milah. So that's how great the bris milah is. Now, we're saying this because Moshe Rabbeinu, and again, I'm going to use the word lazy just to illustrate the point, that Moshe Rabbeinu was lazy when it came to the mitzvah of milah. So Amar Rebbe, our Rebbe says, Chas v'shalom, Moshe Rabbeinu is Shrasu min Amila. It's not possible to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was weak in mitzvahs, that he wasn't doing mitzvahs. We know, and I'll add in, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was plotting to go to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Just so that he could be mekayim the mitzvahs, the extra special mitzvahs that you can do in Eretz Yisrael. So how is it possible that the same Moshe Rabbeinu was like, I don't want to do the bris milah. It's not possible. Elokach Omar. Rather, Moshe Rabbeinu had a cheshbon. He said, "Emol ve'etzei, should I do the bris milah and then travel to Mitzrayim sakonahi?" We know that that's dangerous. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Vayi b'yom ashlisi b'yosim ka'evim." That Shimon and Levi, when they attacked Shechem, they waited for the third day when they were in the most pain. So it's not just the third day; it means all the first 3 days. But they were in the most pain for 3 days of the bris milah. So we see that it's a vulnerable time in the first 3 days. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I can't give a bris and then travel. That would be just dangerous. That's not something that Kodesh Baruch Hu would want." Emel ve'esha shloisha yamim. So fine. So I should do the bris because that's right now. And I should wait 3 days to go down to Mitzrayim. Kodesh Baruch Hu amarli leichshav Mitzrayim. Kodesh Baruch Hu told me I should go down to Mitzrayim right away. I can't wait. Okay, so therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had a very valid and good cheshbon why he did not do a bris milah. So the Gemara then says, "So why was Moshe Rabbeinu punished? What did he do wrong?" So that takes us to the top of Lamed Aleph. We're just going to do the first five lines on the top of Lamed Beis Lamed Aleph. So it says, "So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do wrong? He had a very good cheshbon why he didn't do the bris milah yet." So the answer is, his problem was that he was once he came to rest. The first thing he took care of was getting settled and moving into what we'll translate as a hotel. He was moving in to get settled instead of making the first thing he did the bris milah. Shenemar vayhi b'derech b'maloin, that he was on the way and then he went to the maloin. The first thing he did was take care of the maloin, and that was his mistake. His mistake was not doing the bris when immediately, because he wasn't supposed to, because he was about to travel. Rather, his mistake was the fact that when the moment he had the opportunity to do the bris, that wasn't his first thing and his proper, and that's why we call it nisrashel, that it wasn't his priority. He made it not his priority anymore, and that's why he was punished. Okay, just to finish off the Gemara over here, a couple more lines. Well, it's not going to finish the Gemara, but it's just to finish this point. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer. Rishimel says, "Loi the Moshe Rabbeinu bikesh satan laharig." The satan in the form of a snake wasn't really trying to get Moshe Rabbeinu. El loisatinek, he was trying to get the child himself, the baby that didn't have the bris. That's what the snake was going to eat. Was going to attack. Shenemar ki chosin damim ato li, because you are considered chosin damim. You're the chosin, the groom that's causing me blood. Seir a. Now let's go look. Mi kari chosin. Who is the referring to as a chosin? Aviyam is Tina, because referring to the person, or in this case the child himself that did not have the bris. Because once you have a bris, then you're a chosin with a, then you become married, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why you're referred to as a chosin. But the point that Rishon Gamliel is saying is that the snake wasn't attacking Moshe Rabbeinu himself, the way Rashi brings it in Chumash, and that's what we're more familiar with. But rather, Rishon Gamliel says the snake was attacking, or the satan was attacking the child. And on that note, even so, the chiddush was like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu, for whatever reason, did not realize that was the reason for the attack. Sapphira was the one who realized that was the reason for the attack, and she started to do the bris and she was the one who said, let's do the bris, so to speak, over Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why she gets the credit for saving. So again, Rashi and Chumash says that saving Moshe Rabbeinu. We now know that there's another shita that really what she was saving was, she was saving the child. In any event, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up, we're still in the middle of this sugya, but we'll stop over here for now.